What's up, guys? It's Manny. What's up? This is my new podcast. It's called Manny and Friends, and this is the show where I like to bring my friends in the industry into the studio and have a conversation piece with me. And right now, I've got in the studio with me, I've got to get this correct because she's so dope, executive producer of the hit movie The Duff and director of the upcoming film Devil in IT, which I am also in, Miss Lane Schefter Bishop. Hello.
Thank you. Thank you. That is the best intro I've had in a long time.
Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, you've been in the industry for a while.
Forever. I'm super old, dude.
No, you're not. I mean, you are 28 right now.
Yeah. That's why I counted backwards, like for the last like 10 years. Yeah.
So how long would you say you've been in the industry?
Oh my gosh. I will say over 2 decades.
Over 2 decades?
Yeah.
No way.
I started super young. I was the youngest female director in the DGA when I joined the DGA.
What?
So that'll tell you how long it's been.
Wow.
Yeah, long time.
You are a pioneer. I've said this to you on set before. You are a pioneer for female director. So thank you so much for being and blessing us with your presence right here in the studio. My gosh.
Thank you. Oh my gosh.
Lane, this is exciting because just earlier before we started pushing record, we were talking about Devil in IT, which is the movie that we worked on with Andrew Seeley, Drew Seeley, Rosalie McIntyre, and a bunch of cast members.
Carolyn Hennessy.
I mean,
all the best.
All the best. And I had such a great time on set. You made us feel so comfortable. And it was like a family. And now I've been in touch with a whole bunch of people from the cast and the set.
Because they're all awesome, including you. That's the beauty. You only cast awesome people, and then you have a great set. That's how it works.
Right.
You have to cast all the cool people, and then like just make it fun. Because we're not curing cancer, right? We're making a movie. So try to have a good...
Exactly.
I've heard of sets, and I've been on sets on my way up where people are screaming and all this stuff. And I'm like, oh, no. No, 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 no. I am so not working with that because then I just want to go home. So the whole thing is to make the set really fun. Otherwise, why are we doing this? My God.
And that's what I loved about working with you because you always had a smile on your face, even if something felt like something was going on differently. But you always made everybody feel calm. And it was like, this girl, she's just so professional and she's just so good at what she does.
You should see me at home when I'm freaking out.
Are you yelling at Andrew all the time?
I'm yelling at Andrew all the time. And we butt heads because, you know, when you bring in your husband to produce with you,
we butt heads.
But
it's okay.
I'm acting as producer and director, but when the day I start directing, mm-hmm. I'm the director. Mm-hmm. I have to let him produce.
Right.
So we are always sort of at odds because, you know, I know the deal. It's like, you know, he's watching the dollars and I'm looking for the cool creative. And, you know, there's always going
to
be some.
And you're like, but we've got to push it a little bit more, Andrew. I need a little bit more budget.
It's important. It's important because, I mean, Mar Vista, first of all, Mar Vista Entertainment, who are the guys I've been working for, are so great.
They're awesome.
They've been so good to me. So I want to turn in something extra special. Mm-hmm. I don't want to, you know, like I said to Marguerite, look, you know, I could throw them in a room and sit them at a table and shoot it, but I don't think you guys would be happy. Like, we got to push the envelope and do some cool stuff because why not? If we're going to do it, let's do it really cool. Let's have a good time. You know?
Now, your company is called Vast Entertainment.
Yes. Vast Entertainment does a book to screen, basically. So like The Duff, for example. And I have a couple other projects going on.
And you did The Wicked Moms Club.
I did Wicked Moms Club. I did The Choking Game. And I did Blood, Sweat, and Lies. These are all Lifetime movies. And I think Devil in IT is going to be renamed. I don't know what yet, but that'll probably end up on Lifetime as well. All your fans will see you on Lifetime. Oh, my God, Manny.
Now, let's talk about it. You are known as the book whisperer.
Yeah,
somebody has dubbed you the book whisperer.
CNN.
CNN of all people. I mean, CNN is a huge conglomerate company that they have named you the book whisperer. Now, give us a little story of how that happened.
When I left my last gig, I was an EVP at a creative company working with like Sandra Brown and ABC Family and all this stuff. And I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I'll give my husband full credit. He said to me, look, you're setting up all these books. Why don't you just keep setting up books? And I was like, I don't know. Like, this is before Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Before
Harry Potter. Are you an avid reader?
I was a lit major. Oh, okay. I haven't always been a reader. And so it was just weird timing because at that time, unlike now, nobody right. wanted books. People right. were like, oh God, right. 300 pages, get it away. Right. You know,
how do you make this into a movie? Forget it.
So I had to get very creative and I was like, well, I'll give it a shot for a year. I'll give it a shot and see what happens mm-hmm. Because I love books. And I love the fact that you could read 300 books and probably 50 of those are a good TV series or movie. Mm. You read 300 screenplays, let's be honest, maybe two of them are good.
Right, right, right. So, you're right. Absolutely right.
And basically what happened was in that year, mm-hmm. I set up like 12 projects. And that's when CNN was like, Book Whisper. That's where that all came from.
Wow.
Because I set up so many book projects. It was crazy.
What was the first one that you set up?
Well, The Duff was the very first thing. It took 6.5 years to get it made, mind you. The Duff was the first one that I set up. I was literally in the agent's office when mm-hmm. it came in, when the delivery from the author came in. And it was like, ding, ding. And she goes, oh, I didn't mention this one. Designated Ugly Fat Friend. I was like, oh,
I want it.
Can I read that? Can I read that? I literally, like, that night, she sent it to me. I read it on my Kindle. The next day, I'm like, let me just work a deal with you. Like, give me 2 weeks. If I can't set this up in 2 weeks, I can't set it up. I guarantee. I literally called McGee's company on my way to the airport at JFK wow. and said, please read this at the yeah. top of your pile. I only have it for 2 weeks, and I think it's perfect for you guys. And by the time I landed in L.A., the rest, wow. as they say, is history. So it was crazy.
That's amazing. I mean, congratulations on that movie because it made millions.
Oh God, it was
made millions.
$8.5 million budget. It's made like $43 million
oh
or something
gosh.
So far. Something crazy like that.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
So how do you know to? I guess how do you know which books to pick to turn into a movie?
You know, it's the $1 million question.
Yeah.
I have, as I shamelessly plug, I have a book called Sell Your Story in a Single Sentence.
Mm-hmm.
My whole philosophy is if you can't sell it in a sentence, you can't sell it.
Right.
So I look at a book and I have to latch on to whatever is most unique about that book mm-hmm. and see if I can sell it in a sentence. Mm-hmm. I'll give you my favorite example that I use all the time. A woman brought me a book and very much of the story you've heard, you know, she was in drugs, her boyfriend mm-hmm. was in drugs, they were drug mules, blah, blah, blah. We've all heard it. But as I talked to her, I started to realize what was really unique about it, and I could sell it on that, which is, this is the true story of a woman who at only 19 ran the biggest drug cartel in U.S. history.
That's crazy.
Now I can sell it.
Yeah.
So now that's always been my philosophy, yeah. and I wrote this book to teach writers how to create that log line, because that one sentence, that's how much time you have on the phone when you right. call up execs, because they have the attention span of a gnat in
yeah.
Hollywood.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
They're getting pitched everything.
Yes.
Left to right. Lots
so you
of people
have
are calling
to say,
yeah.
this is what's unique about it in one sentence. That's how I was so successful. And that's how I look at material. If there's anything about it that feels familiar mm-hmm. or is like, oh, that reminds me of blank, I don't take it on because I can't sell mm-hmm. that.
Right.
I can't sell something you've already seen. I have to sell the shiny new toy. Guess what? This is unique and different.
Right.
And this is why, right. you know.
This is a Rubik's Cube, but it's different.
That's right. But it's such a different, it's a round thing, but it has like a little point. It's totally different.
So you were a lit major. When did it become, I guess, noticeable to you when you wanted to become a director?
So I started in theater as a director.
Okay.
I went to UC Santa Barbara, big party school. Yes, it
yes,
is.
Yes, it is.
Because I just
I'm not sending my daughter
beach.
There.
Yeah. And,
maybe
and that
I
was,
might.
That
I
was
mean,
my
she,
undergrad.
She may become the next Lane Schefter Bishop.
Right.
I don't know.
Anyone who tells you they're studying at UCSB is
they're not.
Lying. Okay. So I went there as a lit major, which was great. Actually, I went to the school where Marvin Mudrick talked, who's Dead Poets Society is based on
no
him.
No way.
Called the College of Creative what? Studies. Yeah, so that's where I went, which was really cool.
That's awesome.
And then after that, I had done theater. Mm-hmm. I was a theater director. And there was that moment where you're like, okay, either I go to New York and mm-hmm. I do theater, which I was born in New York, but I didn't really want to live there.
Yeah.
Or I stay here and I do film, because those are your choices mm-hmm. at that point. And I went to USC Film School and decided this is where I'm going to be. And about halfway through USC, I started my own production company.
Mm.
And I would shoot anything. My husband likes to say, you'd shoot dancing Triscuits. That's his comment. Which is true. I would shoot anything. It didn't matter. As long as I could direct,
yeah.
it didn't matter what it was. I did PSAs. I did industrials. I did music videos. I did Rock the Vote for MTV. I did anything I could freaking do
wow.
to just keep directing. Because my philosophy was, you want to be a director?
Mm-hmm.
Keep directing. Yeah, eventually, someone's going to pay you to do that.
Right. Yeah, and that goes along with any kind of dream you have that you want to do. If you, the more and more you keep on doing it, you keep singing. I mean, Okay.
You manifest your destiny, right?
Yeah, you manifest your destiny. But if you're not good at it, then no,
well, then you're screwed.
Then you're screwed. Oh, my gosh. That's so crazy. So you like to produce as well. So that's, you know, when people see producers and they see directors, it's a separate entity, right?
It really is. I always try to explain that producers are essentially packagers. Mm-hmm. They find the material, they find the right director, they find the right screenwriter, attach talent. They're the ones kind of putting the package together.
Right.
That's what a producer does. The director's doing all the creative. Yeah. They're like, okay, how do I want to shoot this? And, mm-hmm. you know, I want to work with, I came from theater, so I always want to work with the actors. That's always my favorite part of the whole thing, you know. So they're very different. A lot of people think they're like almost the same. They're completely different.
Right. Yeah, no. And, you know, when people see, oh, producer, director, some people who don't really know about the industry, they go, oh, she's doing it again. Like, she's a producer and director. What's the separation between the two?
It's they night don't know. And day. Yeah. And I personally do not think I could do both well while I'm directing. Like, mm-hmm. I have to bring in another, whether it's my husband, like on Choking Game, I brought in Orly Adelson's guy, who was a really dear friend to produce. The day I start directing, I have to have another producer. Mm. I know there are people who do both while they're directing. I just don't think I'd do a good job directing if I'm not completely focused on that. No way.
Totally.
So it's really nice to be able to hand over the reins. And my husband taught me everything I know about producing. So it's actually been great. He has Bishop Lyons Entertainment and they do a whole bunch of stuff. And so I could really relax. He took over and that was great because I didn't worry about anything on the producing side because I knew it was handled.
Yeah.
Which is so such a relief as a director. And I felt obviously supported, very supported.
And you're from New York.
Yes. I was born in New York.
Oh, you were born in New York.
But we moved out here when I was really young. Mm-hmm. And I really don't, I'm a total weather wimp because I grew up here and look outside. It's beautiful.
I love LA.
So for so many years, I would be like, oh, I'm so glad I don't live in New York. And now, of course, I go to New York like 4 or 5 times a year because that's where I get all my book material.
Is there like a book convention or something?
Well, there's a couple things. One, I work with a whole bunch of authors, agents, about 65 of them now.
Wow.
And I get material kind of before anybody else because I've been working with them for so long. And then there's also Book Expo, which is at the end of May this year.
So what draws you to a book? Is it the cover of a book? Is it the person who's been writing for years and you're like, maybe I'll finally read that book? Or what is it about the book that draws you to that book to actually pick up and read?
I mean, usually I would say...
Or is it the pitch from the agent?
It's that an agent says to me, listen to this. This is so cool. Or like Reboot. I set up Reboot with Peter Ternan at Box and Reboot. We had it. It was 100 pages when we set it up. It wasn't even a full book. It's a great book, by the way, Amy Tintera. And basically, the agent called me and said, this was on my slush pile. I don't even rep her yet, but you have to read this. It's really good.
What's slush pile, by the way?
Slush pile is where all the unsolicited material goes from authors who want to be represented by an agent. If they're unsolicited, they go on what they call the slush pile. Gotcha. And then when the agent has time, they look through the slush pile to see if there's anything worth anything.
So that's how it works.
So that's how she sent me that book, which wasn't even a book yet. Mm-hmm. And, Confessions of a Sociopath was only a book proposal. It was only like 11 pages when I first set it up.
What?
I set up initially with Scott Stuber at NBC and Uni, and it was nothing. It wasn't even close to a book yet.
So let's take it back. You read the 11 pages?
And I said, this is a true story. A woman who is a very hot 30s, you know, lawyer, law professor, sociopath who taught Sunday school. I mean, to me, that's an outside the box law show.
That's crazy.
It screams to be an outside the box law show.
Yeah.
And it was just bad timing. And then we sort of reset it up with Mike Medavoy at UCP, at Universal Cable Productions. And then Lisa Edelstein jumped on board and Carol Barbie jumped on board, who's a big showrunner. Mm-hmm. And it all just sort of came together.
Wow.
So, you know,
so did they have to finish the book to write it?
Oh, the book is out.
Oh, okay.
Confessions of a Sociopath now. And
more than 11 pages.
More than 11 pages. That's a pretty typical book proposal.
Oh, is it?
They
okay.
show a couple chapters and like comps like other books you would like and little intro. And it just gives you a feel for the whole thing. But sometimes you just know, like that idea,
right.
A lawyer, law professor, sociopath, hot 30s, teaching Sunday school.
Hello.
It's, I mean, you kind of think, wow, that's like the weirdest outside the box, cool yeah. law show ever.
Yeah. No, that's crazy.
So you kind of know, yeah. you know, and I don't need the whole book to sell mm-hmm. it because to be honest, who's going to read it?
Right.
Some 17-year-old right. who's in right. the basement of Disney is doing coverage and right. reading that book. You know, right. no exec is reading that book.
I mean, it was in the slush pile.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Now so. I know how to use that term. So.
There you go. Yeah. The unsolicited pile of stuff that everybody gets. I have a slush pile too. Everybody gets unsolicited.
Now, congrats to you being the youngest to be in the DGA.
Yeah, back That's in the day. That's how crazy. Old I am, Manny.
No, you're not old. I mean, yeah. you were, I mean, listen, how old were you to be the youngest
I was
in the DGA?
Just in my 20s, just barely. So,
wow.
But
That's an amazing feat.
Honestly, if I had it to do over again, mm-hmm. I wouldn't do it. Because the second you become union, you can no longer do non-union work. And most of the work out there when you're starting out is non-union
right,
work.
Right.
So it made it very difficult.
Really?
For me. Yeah.
Let's talk about that journey. How were you able to overcome to actually become, you know, I guess a working director in the union?
You know, the interesting thing is...
how do you get around that?
I had a weird stroke of luck in that my name, Lane, doesn't tell you if I'm male or female. Mm. Yeah. So a lot of times I would get meetings mm-hmm. and you could tell the second you walked in,
right.
they thought you were going to be a guy.
Right.
That helped me because I got into doors that right. a lot of women weren't getting into. There is a glass ceiling. I'm not even a rabid feminist. There is a glass ceiling right. in this industry. It's very difficult as a female. And I also feel like sometimes because it's so hard, men help men, but women don't help women. They're like, I had to struggle. You should struggle. You know, right. it's like really frustrating. And I try desperately to hire women on my mm-hmm. crews to hire yeah. to make parts that are male. Sometimes I make them female. Like I right. try so hard because I know how hard it is in yeah. this industry as a female. It's really hard.
It is.
So I just got lucky. I had so many meetings at places that I know normally if my name had been Jennifer or Stephanie, mm-hmm. I would not have even gotten to go in and pitch.
That's crazy.
That's the crazy, that's crazy. Part. That's what really helped me
yeah.
is I was able to get through that first door mm-hmm. and pitch and say, here's my vision for this cool thing.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what they're looking for. Anytime you go in to pitch anything, they're looking for like, this is my cool vision for yeah. this. Like when we were talking about the one that that I wrote that's going to
yes.
get filmed next
yes.
Called Exposed. When I was sitting at that dinner, I literally said to my executive producer, okay, so here's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm selling it, right?
Yeah.
It's there's a woman and she goes into the morgue in the middle of the night. She breaks in and she pulls out the Jane Doe slab and she flips open the sheet and she's looking at her own face. Dun, dun, dun. You know, I'm selling
yeah.
my idea for how cool this could be to
right.
you. That's the whole thing.
Right.
But if I can't get in that door to sell it to you, what
yeah.
good does it do?
That's
me?
True.
You know, I
That's
could have
true.
The coolest ideas on the planet and doesn't
and-
matter.
So is Lane your birth name?
Yeah.
It is.
It is.
That's crazy.
Isn't that funny?
And so when you started sending out your, reel to everybody, and it just said Lane Schefter Bishop.
At the time, I think it was Lane Schefter back then.
Oh, really?
I don't think I was even married. Yeah. But, I mean, yeah, people, they liked the reel. They called me in, and then
that's crazy.
It was just... There is that moment. You just know. Mm-hmm. There's that moment where they look at you like, oh,
yeah.
you're female,
yeah.
which was so interesting, you know, because I guess when you leave film school, you're so, you know, mm-hmm. everything's going to be great and everyone wants to hire you. And, you know, nope. and then you get into the real world
the
and you're
struggle.
Like, oh, holy moly, this is hard, you know.
yeah.
And people told me it takes, you know, 20 years, whatever. Mm-hmm. And I thought, haha, that's very funny. But yes, it does.
It like, does.
It just.
It does. It really
does. It
takes
does. A long time.
And I think that's for any industry. You know, I've been here at the radio station 20 years and I'm just now starting to feel like, wow, my fruits of my labor are starting to pay off.
It takes 20 years,
it takes
right?
20
Jesus
years.
Christ. Why does it take so long?
It does. I'm like, we didn't start like when we were babies.
I know, right?
But it's crazy. But I think it helps us mature in the game where people start to come to us now because they're like, they've done it for a while. They're experienced. They know what to do. They know how to save my project.
Right, right. Know? And I'm hoping now with the whole Me Too thing, mm-hmm. I'm hoping that it really will change things in the industry. I'm
yeah.
hoping that now suddenly the industry will finally start giving female yep. directors more of an opportunity because it really was so, so, so hard for so long.
Yeah.
And I'm so tired of the lip service. For many years we got the like right before the Academy Awards, what happens is all the articles come out that are always the same. Hey, only, you know, one half of 1% of all female directors are working. And there's a glass ceiling. And you hear the same stuff every year. Mm-hmm. And then every year the studios go, oh, but we have this brand new minority and women program and blah, blah, blah. Right. And they tell all the lip service about how they're going to hire more women and hire more minorities. And then the next year you get the same statistics. It never changes.
It never changes.
For 20 years. It's been
That's crazy.
Unbelievably frustrating.
You know, my most funnest times on set was working with female directors.
Really? Yeah. I love hearing that.
Yeah. Mary Lou Bellis, who's a good sitcom. She did like a bunch of Saved by the Bell back in the day.
Yeah, yeah.
She's doing a bunch of ABC stuff now. And then you. And then there was another, I can't even remember her name because it was a while back. It was, I did a student film and she was a great director as well. And I'm like, so my funnest and most, I had the most best experience it was with female directors because all the time you guys made me feel so comfortable. Like, all right, Manny, stop getting in your head. Just do what you're hired to do. Just get in there and act.
You
just
were so great, though, because you had that painful monologue, that painful, painful monologue. I mean, on paper, it looked so cool.
Right.
But trying to say it, it's like, oh, forget it. Yeah. You know? And you could tell, like very first one out of the box, you said it, you memorized it, you were so good about it. And I was like, oh, man. Oh, this poor dude has to say this huge monologue that's just not, it's not natural. It's not something you would say.
Right.
So we were like, okay, Manny, take that, throw that away.
And I love that. I loved how you just took control and you were just like, all right, Manny's not doing that dang monologue.
He's going to do something. Yeah, what would you say?
Yeah, let's do it.
It's going to be better.
And we did it and we got through it. And oh my gosh, it was like the best experience ever. So thank you.
Wait till you see yourself.
Oh my gosh.
So good, Manny.
I can't wait.
You're so good in this movie. Wait.
If you were to tell yourself, your young self, what any advice, what would you say to her?
Wow, that's a great question.
Like think about that time when you were going into film school at USC. What would you tell your young self now that you know what the stuff that you're doing now?
I think I would need to tell myself to enjoy the process. I was so goal oriented. You know, in your 20s, you just want it
just go.
Yesterday.
Yeah.
You want it and you want it bad and you want it yesterday. So you're not enjoying the process because you're always looking ahead, trying to get, you know, beat your head against that same wall as hard as you can because you want to get there. And now I enjoy the process. I enjoy the time between films. I'm not going, when's my next film?
Right.
I mean, yes, I have one coming up, but in the meantime, I'm trying to, you know, finesse relationships, go out with, you know, producers I know or work on a screenplay idea I have or whatever. I'm trying to learn that what happens during the process is as enjoyable as when you're on that set, which is, of course, the highlight for me of any day is being on a set. So I think it's something that you learn with age, you know, because in your 20s, you're like, no. I want to be famous yesterday, and how can I do that?
Isn't that funny? Like, in your 20s, you're like, I don't got time. I got to do that. And you're like, just so adamant that you're so right all the time.
Yes.
And then as you get older, you're like, you know what? We're chilling. We're going to make this happen regardless. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, we need just to like chill. Enjoy life. Goodness. Relax. It's true. I think part of it is, of course, that you're like, wow, life's short now. What the hell?
Well, we're going to take it slow.
But I think it's really important, you know, to enjoy because it took you 20 years to get here, right?
Yeah.
If you're not enjoying it, what are you doing? You know, if you're thinking about your next thing or your next thing, you're not enjoying where you're at.
Yep. Now, last question. Where do you see Vast Entertainment's Lane Schefter Bishop going in the next, I guess, I don't know, 2-3 years? I know you got a couple projects in line right now, but where do you see yourself?
Yeah, I mean, the beauty is I have 3 TV projects, series that are coming up. I have The Confessions of a Sociopath. I have a project called The Body Institute with Zayden and Marin. And then I have one with Dynamic TV and Awesomeness. Those Dynamic are the guys who do Van Helsing.
Oh, yeah.
They're great. And Awesomeness TV, and we're looking at doing this project called Shifters for their direct-to-series Hulu deal. And in all of these situations, I'm attached to direct episodes.
Oh, okay.
I have wanted to be an episodic for a very long time, but it's the industry is a catch-22, but that in particular is a huge catch-22.
Yeah.
If you haven't directed episodic, you can't direct episodic. Mm-hmm. It's that.
Yeah.
And it's also a big boys club. There are very few female directors doing episodic.
Very few.
Very few.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's very hard to break in to episodic directing. And what's so funny is, like, look, we just did a movie in 14 days. Of course I could do episodic.
That was the most insane process ever. I'm like, did we just rap?
I know. It's so crazy.
We just started. Did we just rap? That was 2 weeks.
I know. But the thing is, they don't realize that. They just think, well, you haven't done episodic, so how could you do episodic? So I'm waiting for those to go, because once I can start directing, and because I'm producing those, I'm getting to direct a certain number of episodes, I can become an episodic director and then be doing other shows, which is what I've wanted to do for a very long time.
Was that was that on your vision board back in the day?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I love features. Mm-hmm. I love them because they are the director's medium more so than television.
Right.
But I love the idea of episodic because the actors already know their characters. Mm. So all you get to do, the fun part, which is you go in and tweak and change and adjust instead of starting from scratch. So I've always wanted to do episodic, and it's very much a boys club. It's very hard to get in if you haven't done it.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for these three series so that I can say I'm an episodic director, because I'll have done a couple of episodes for each series.
Well,
so that's my goal.
We are throwing it out there so that it manifests.
There
just
you
like
go.
We were talking about it earlier. And
go.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
But I have one more
you.
Thing. I would like to have Manny Streets in another movie of mine. That's what I would really like to have happen.
Thank you. Thank you.
That would be awesome.
I'm so glad that, I did my part.
I'm going to call you in, man, on my next film. Don't think I'm not. I'm going to be like, Manny, I have a part for you, dude. Come in.
You don't even have to ask me. Just be like, Manny, you're coming here tomorrow at 6 a.m. I'm there.
And the next one's in Vegas. That should be loads of fun.
Hold on.
Can I get you to Vegas? I don't know if you'd like that.
I have to check with my schedule.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm there. Lane Schefter Bishop, thank you so much for coming in. This was so fun.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, my
gosh. This is a blast.
This is so great. Thank you.
I love it.
You're the best.